This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Despite overwhelming demand for a do not spam list, the federal government threw up its hands last month. The Federal Trade Commission gloomily concluded that it wouldn't work. Worse, that spammers would likely hijack such a list. Now they're considering a form of frontier justice, a bounty that would reward citizens who hunt down the bad guys. If you've ever been cheated in an internet auction or opened your mailbox to a full screen of spam, you know how lawless the internet can be. With the feds overwhelmed or outnumbered in the chat rooms and auction sites out on the digital frontier, vigilantes have sprung up. Some wield high-level programming skills, others come armed with little more than an email account and a lot of free time. Together, they're tackling some of the Viagra peddlers and scam artists on the web. Later in the program, Alan Schwartz joins us to talk about our fascination with baseball's statistics. Consider, for example, the box score, a self-contained universe as busy and balanced as a carbon atom. The numbers game. But first, internet vigilantes, what they're doing online and whether it helps or hurts the web. If you've ever tried to take out a fraudulent eBay user or pursued a Nigerian scam email, give us a phone call. We want to hear from the counter-scammers and anti-spammers out there. And if you're a simple web user, how ethical is it to allow private citizens to take the law into their own digits? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. But before we move on to the defenses people use to keep the web safe, let's start with its latest danger. Last weekend, the Internet Storm Center, a website dedicated to tracking up-to-date threats to computer networks worldwide, received notice of a new kind of problem. Not quite a virus or a worm or any of the other things we've come to fear. This nasty little program had an insatiable appetite for banking information. Joining us to explain more about the problem is the Storm Center volunteer who took on this project. Tom Liston joins us from McHenry, Illinois. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi there.
So in terms of a layman like me could understand, tell us what this thing does.
Well, when you go to a website, what this will do is, by using some flaws in Internet Explorer, it will have itself downloaded onto your machine. It will then install itself as what is known as a browser helper object under an Internet Explorer. At that point in time, this has become essentially a part of Internet Explorer, and it has access to any of the information that Internet Explorer has access to. It sits and it watches for you to go to any one of about 50 different banking websites. And when you go to log into that website, it grabs the information that you're going to be sending to that website before it gets encrypted. We've always told people in the past that if you've got that little padlock in the bottom of your browser, that you're okay because the information that you're sending has been encrypted. Well, what this does is, because it's part of Internet Explorer, it can grab the information before it gets encrypted. It then packages it up and sends it off to a website for the people who wrote it to use to probably, you know, empty out your bank account.
And you say it's used on Internet Explorer, but is this flaw you were talking about unique to that browser, or is it common to all browsers?
The flaws in this particular piece of software are written really targeted towards Internet Explorer. It would be possible for something like this to be done on another browser. It would have to take a slightly different form.
Is there any way to know if your computer is infected, or should people just stop online banking for a while?
Well, there are some ways that you can find out by using some software that's available on the Internet. One in particular is called BHO Daemon. BHO stands for Browser Helper Object, and what this does is it takes a look through your computer's registry and figures out what browser helper objects are installed. It doesn't really do much beyond that, except at this point in time you can take a look at the list and decide if those are things you want to have installed on your computer or not.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very good browser helper objects, and there are some good reason to have them. The real problem lies in the fact that these can be installed silently without any real feedback from the user.
Now, how widespread do you suspect that this particular thing, whatever it is?
We really don't know. It's something that's just been put out to the antivirus companies at the end of last week. Signatures are still going out for people to update their antivirus, and we really won't know the full impact and how widespread it is until a lot of people have those signatures available to them. Mm-hmm. Currently, it's probably not very widespread, and it was shut down pretty quickly, but the people who did this put an awful lot of work into getting it all set up, and I kind of have an idea that even though we've shut down this particular instance of this, we're probably going to see some more of this in the future.
Well, viruses used to just be about sort of wreaking havoc. Is this kind of theft becoming more common?
Absolutely. Probably about the middle of the year 2003, beginning of the year 2003, we saw a pretty definite shift in the kind of malicious software that we see on the Internet. It used to be, like you said, just kind of almost like graffiti. Kids going out and doing something to say, hey, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Now the shift is really towards trying to make financial gain out of this. And we're really seeing a lot more professionalism in the kinds of software that we're seeing out there, the kinds of malicious software that we're seeing.
We're talking with Tom Liston about a new kind of threat on the Internet, and we're taking your phone calls about vigilante justice on the World Wide Web. But let's take one first on this question that Tom Liston has been talking about. Troy is with us from Kansas City, Missouri.
Good evening. Good afternoon, rather, Neil. How are you this afternoon?
Very well, thanks.
Recently, I installed a Mozilla Firefox, which is kind of an alternative web browser. Is this really more secure for me, or is it just more aesthetically pleasing to be surfing the web with?
Tom Liston?
Mozilla Firefox, simply because it has a smaller installed base, is going to be less of a target. Mozilla also, all the Mozilla-based browsers, of which Firefox is one, allow you a lot more control over the extensions that are added into the software itself. All browsers have some means of extending the functionality of the browser, and Mozilla does too. The nice thing about the Mozilla-based browsers is they give you a little panel that you can bring up at any time and see what extensions are installed. Currently, Internet Explorer doesn't have that ability. We've heard that when Service Pack number 2 comes out for Windows XP, it will have that ability.
Troy, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye. And Tom Liston, there are a lot of viruses. We would constantly get calls from Mac users saying, hey, this is not my problem. This goes after something that's on PCs. Does this discriminate between Macs and PCs?
Almost any kind of software will discriminate between Macs and PCs because they use two different kinds of microprocessors. This particular piece of software is written to run on a Windows-based, an Intel-based computer. It will not run on a Mac.
Tom Liston, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Liston, a volunteer handler at the Internet Storm Center, and he joined us today on the phone from McHenry, Illinois. Well, joining us now from the studios of KGO in San Francisco is Andrew Brandt, associate editor of PC World Magazine, where he covers privacy, computer security, and spam issues. And it's good to have you on the program.
Hi, thank you, Neil.
We just heard about this new problem on the web, but it doesn't seem to have a handy name yet, like a worm or a virus or a Trojan horse. It makes it a little difficult to talk about. Care to give it a shot at giving this a name?
Yeah, we've been running this around in the PC World offices, and while I kind of dread saying the name because it is a little goofy, it is also quite appropriate.
On the Internet. I mean, go on.
That's right. Yes, nobody's ever heard of that before. We're calling them Super Snoopers. At least internally, I'm hoping that doesn't become a widely accepted phrase. But they essentially are what we're seeing in terms of the theft-oriented viruses and worms taken to a new level.
This group that tracked down the snooper, they're an all-volunteer private organization. Is this the future of policing on the web?
It seems like that's the way it's evolving, although it's not certain. It's not clear that that's going to be the way it will always be. There are more and more law enforcement agencies taking a closer look and taking more of a hands-on approach at dealing with issues like this over the Internet. But the real issue is that the police agencies need to be educated, just like an average computer user needs to be educated. And police agency people are usually doing all day long crime fighting, and they're not necessarily sitting in front of the computer reading about computer stuff. So they're not necessarily as up to speed as some of these techie guys who work for Sands.
Well, the Internet Storm Center, I guess, is one example of give us some others of the people who are pursuing private individuals who are pursuing evildoers, I think is the word we're looking for, on the web.
Yeah, well, there are quite a lot of people who are out there trying to track down the bad guys. One typical example that we hear a lot about are people who are very active in fighting the folks who are spreading and sharing and taking child pornography pictures online. And there are a number of different both individuals and groups who are more or less organized to shut these people down just out of moral outrage and disgust with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. How long have these people been doing this?
Well, child porn has been being spread on the net almost since day one, and it's taken a while for these groups to get organized, but it's been happening for at least a couple of years now that people have started to, in a real organized and methodical manner, come up with procedures to track down who these people are, to try to lure them into giving up their most lurid fantasies online, and then providing personally identifiable information such as photographs and phone numbers that will then be extremely incriminating should a police agency get involved. And that's the big question now, is that whether police agencies have the resources and the interest in taking the evidence that these groups are collecting and using them to prosecute people.
Now, that's one aspect of activity, but there are a lot of other counter-scammers and anti-spammers.
Absolutely, and the anti-spam activist community, I would hesitate to call them vigilantes, because vigilante implies that they're basically taking the law into their own hands, and until recently, there haven't been very many laws regarding spam. So in a lot of ways, these people were simply just dealing with a problem that they saw as almost intractable and trying to do what they could to stop it. But there are people out there who are tracking down and databasing and profiling the people who send out spam and the companies that allow them to do business. And there is a very organized campaign online to try to shut down spammers and to harass and intimidate the ISPs that give them accounts into not contracting with them.
Well, whether you see yourself as a vigilante, a victim, or a vigorous activist, give us a phone call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Dan, who's with us from Boone, California.
Hello.
Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Actually, I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, I apologize.
That's okay. Yeah, I just want to say that I've sort of become a quasi-vigilante in spite of my being a college professor. I'm so tired of getting these emails from supposed Nigerians that I've come up with a ploy of my own. I don't know whether it does any good, but I like to think that it does. What I did is I captured a virus that I accidentally received, got through my Norton because it had been zipped, and so initially it wasn't recognized. I renamed it my account numbers.zip, and I've been sending that back to it with a friendly little reply to these Nigerians that, gee, I'm on board. Here are my account numbers. Unzip it into your PC. I also use CloudMark SpamNet, which is a community-based anti-spam tool. It's only a few bucks a month, and what it does is when you receive an email, it goes out and checks the SpamNet database to see if it's spam. If it is, it kills it in Outlook right away.
That's a defense as opposed to the active operations of sending somebody a virus.
Right. And what it does, if one gets through to me initially, then I click on it and I click block, and sort of my little vote to SpamNet says I consider this spam. Mm-hmm. And the whole community, when there are enough votes, then the software automatically blocks those.
Dan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking more about vigilantes on the web when we come back from a short break. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the wild, wild web and users who try in big ways and small To make it safer for the rest of us, from people taking on fraudulent eBay auctions to compilers of spam blacklists, digital vigilantes are increasingly the law on the web. Our guest is Andrew Brandt, Senior Associate Editor of PC World Magazine. You're invited to join us, 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And Andrew, before the break, we were talking about a new form of monster on the web. You were calling it the super snooper. An emailer named Tim Rand says Norton, that's a website that that's a company that sells firewalls and defenses against these sorts of things, says Norton has named it pwsteel.refest. You know, as unhappy as you might be with Super Snooper, I think you've got a better name.
Thank you very much. It's certainly more memorable than the virus names that come out of the virus labs.
Another email question. Mary Zins in Miami, Florida wants to know, does having a firewall prevent getting this snooper on a PC?
There is a way to prevent getting this on your PC, but in doing so, what I've discovered is that you basically disable quite a lot of regular internet sites from working properly in the Internet Explorer browser. The way that you turn it off is by completely disabling JavaScript in the Internet Explorer browser, and there are several menus where it's possible to do that through the tools options in Internet Explorer.
But as
However,
you mentioned, you need JavaScript for a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, what I found is that my email websites don't work anymore. I can't load menus in certain web pages that have drop-down menus and other things. So a lot of that active content that allows the Super Snooper to load into your machine also allows a lot of the rest of the web to work. So you really are kind of stuck if you really want to use Internet Explorer and you don't want to get yourself infected, you're in a little bit of a catch-22. What we're recommending to people right now is that they really shouldn't be using Internet Explorer at all for anything that they can get away with. Try to use alternative browsers like Mozilla, as the other person mentioned.
Or Netscape or any of the others, yeah.
Netscape, Opera, there are so many others out there. But it's more convenient to use Internet Explorer, and a lot of people probably don't think about it. Especially because it's the default browser on the machine, and when you click a link in your email program or anywhere else, it's usually going to launch Internet Explorer unless you specifically do something to stop that from happening.
Okay, let's get
just kind of a mess.
Let's get another caller on the line. Jeff is with us from Chico, California.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. This is a great show.
Thank you.
One of the points that I constantly think of is that, as like you said, that law enforcement is constantly overwhelmed with the amount of things that are happening on the individual user level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the thought that came to my mind is that we have the right to defend ourselves in life, essentially, in like real life, and why wouldn't that same right to defend ourselves be transferred onto the web?
Andrew Brandt?
Because I think for the most part you're not in imminent danger of physical harm when someone is just typing text into a window. However, law enforcement has not looked very harshly on people who help them to track down child pornographers, for example. So it's not as though being a vigilante is necessarily going to put you afoul of the law. It's just that there's a line you can't cross as a vigilante, just like there's a line you shouldn't cross if you're just an online person in general.
Well, what about someone like the caller we had just before the break who got scam emails and decided to send them a virus he'd received from somebody else?
Well, there are definitely laws that prohibit the use of, there are laws against sending viruses for one, and these are generally, they fall under a lot of different kinds of computer security regulations and legislation. So sending a virus to someone deliberately is probably crossing the line. But what we found is that there are people out there who enjoy leading on the Nigerian scammers, and they feel like as long as they are keeping this Nigerian scammer busy with a bunch of nonsense back and forth emails, and sometimes this can go on for days and weeks, and the discussions get to be pretty hilarious, they're keeping that guy from scamming other people. And that's probably a more effective and definitely legal way to be an online vigilante and not get yourself in trouble.
Could online vigilantism be considered defending your property?
Again, I think it's only if your property is in imminent danger of physical harm. Now, there have been people who... became vigilantes because they were personally harassed or stalked online, and someone tracked them down to their home and then harassed them at their home.
Oh, wow.
In those cases, then you would definitely want to call the police. And a lot of people, especially people who are involved in computer security, say if there's someone online who is harassing you, the first thing you should be doing is calling the police to get their help.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got them on your side, then it's really no problem.
But that's a specific harassment as opposed to, you know, the sort of blanket viruses or emails that we get.
That's right. And really, you know, sending a virus back to a virus writer or to a spammer, for one thing, there's nothing to say that the person who sent you the spam email is necessarily not using spam filtering software themselves and antivirus software themselves. So if the Nigerian scammers are really smart, they're also using SpamNet and they're also using Norton antivirus or some other antivirus software, and it's blocking that virus from coming into their machine anyway, so they'll just ignore you and move on to the next one.
Jeff, thanks very much for the call. As just mentioned, humor is one of the weapons unleashed in this war against the spammers and the scammers. Jonathan Land joins us now. For the past few years, he's been on a mission to combat spam with humor. He runs the website thespamletters.com, and he'll soon have a book out by the same name. And he joins us now on the phone from Caldwell, New Jersey. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you respond to these guys who send those emails claiming to be Nigerian princes?
I most certainly do, although sometimes they're actually Nigerians from Ohio or Canada. Some of them actually come from Nigeria, but I remember there was this news story recently where they arrested, I think, one or two people up in Canada who were getting in on the Nigerian con man scheme without having to go to Nigeria or actually be from there.
Well, no matter where they're from, do they send you email messages back?
Yes, it's dealing with those sorts of con artists is really easy because you can pretty much say anything you'd like to them and they'll respond thinking that they can get...
They've got you on the hook.
Yeah, they're thinking, okay, well, if this person took the time to respond, then they are silly enough to fall for their grand scheme. But unfortunately, there are more and more people who are in particular getting into the Nigerian spam baiting game that they must get a lot of people who are simply yanking their crank as opposed to forking over their hard-earned cash.
As mentioned, this can get pretty funny at times.
Oh, definitely. It's the good thing about dealing with the Nigerians is that they'll always write back to you no matter what, whether you try to send something to them saying, hi, I'm interested in your offer, I'd like to take you up on it, or if you send them completely absurd and ludicrous. One time I sent a spammer a letter back saying that I was in on the Nigerian spam game as well, and it was just a funny coincidence that two people in the business found each other like this. And so I wrote them back with a whole spiel to that effect, and they pretty much just wrote back saying, okay, now let's proceed. What's that bank account number?
Right. So their sense of humor is not always as perky as yours.
Well, it depends on the person. I've also had experiences that have gone on for a long time. There's this one spammer I dealt with named Hamza Kalu, who he wrote back to me something like 12 or 13 times, and at the end I was aggravating him so much that he kept writing back to me, please don't write back to me, and that didn't stop me, and eventually he threatened to put a voodoo curse on me.
As far as you know, you're not feeling any sudden pains in your left arm or anything?
Well, I've had tons of colds over the last few years, and just anything bad that happens to me, no matter how minor or major, I now have a perfectly semi-legitimate excuse for.
I bet your book editor accepted that excuse when you called and said you're going to be late with your manuscript.
Yeah, it's great. There's no refuting the curse. You just can't... No one wants to mess with you when you throw that around.
Jonathan Land, good luck with the book.
Thank you so much.
Jonathan Land runs the Spam Letters website, compiling funny replies to spams and scams. The book is coming out, I think, later this year from No Starch Press, and he spoke with us from his home in Caldwell, New Jersey. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Heidi. Heidi joins us from San Antonio.
Hi.
Hi.
Actually, before I go to my main comment, I wanted to comment on another couple of things really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the Nigerian scam has been repeated for a number of other countries now. So if you see someone claiming to be high up in any government that wants to your help to help them split money with you, you should be wary.
I keep expecting to get one from a prince of Denmark.
I know I've gotten them regarding Haiti and Chechnya and a number of other places. The other is that a lot of times when you receive a spam, the spam is actually sent from a drone machine, which is a computer that's been taken over unbeknownst to the computer owner. So if you send a virus back, you're actually sending a virus to someone who's clueless and innocent.
Okay.
But as far as my primary comment, I don't know if I would necessarily refer to myself as a vigilante, but I spend all day on the Internet, and I have for many years because I work on the Internet, and when I see people being harmed in any number of ways, either through spam or eBay transactions or websites ripping them off, I do try and take action. But it becomes very wearing because for all the many, many times, probably well over 100, that I've tracked down all the information on someone and sent it off to the proper person to get them shut down, I've only had a handful of successes.
Hmm. Andrew Brandt, I don't think Heidi's alone, and it must get awfully frustrating.
It is one of the biggest frustrations online that people do not get the response that they feel that they should get for reporting something that's a serious crime. I personally have had this experience myself where someone at a Brazilian ISP was sending repeated hack attacks against a machine that I have at home. And when I finally got through to someone at that internet service provider, they told me, well, you really should be securing your machine against attacks. We can't do anything to stop our customers from doing these things. And I just thought that was a really just wrong-headed way to think about computer security, that there's nothing they can do, so therefore you really need to be defensive.
Hmm. Heidi, is this something you're going to continue doing despite the frustration?
Well, I tell myself I'm going to stop, and then I get so worried about something that I take action. Just yesterday, I got a spam purporting to be from U.S. Bank that was quite well done, and it was asking people to re-enter their security information, as we've seen with eBay and PayPal and Citibank. And I almost took action on it, but I said to myself, no, stop. All you're going to get is a form email back. Probably other people have already reported this. You have other things that you have to do, and hope for the best. Because it's too often frustrating and time-consuming and time that I can't spend. I can't afford to spend.
Mm-hmm. Well, Heidi, good luck.
Thank you.
And we all extend it to you. We could all use your help. We're talking with Andrew Brand of the PC World, and you were talking about vigilante justice and vigilante efforts to police the World Wide Web. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Daniel, who's with us from Derby, Kansas.
That's correct. Hi.
Hi, Daniel.
Well, actually, I heard a really interesting, I think this was the Blaster virus when that was out. Somebody wrote a virus that would get on your computer, spread itself around, but once it was on your computer, it deleted the Blaster virus. It was an antiviral virus, which I thought is perfect vigilante justice because it's still a virus, so it's illegal, but it's doing a helpful service.
Andrew Brandt, wasn't that a white-hatted virus then?
Yeah, that's right. And actually, it wasn't the slammer worm, but it was the MyDoom worm, where someone had written a worm pretty soon after MyDoom hit the Internet, variously called Welchia or Natchi. And essentially, it used exactly the same method that MyDoom used to break into computers, only that rather than spread itself around, it would first look for the MyDoom worm on the computer. If it found it, it would kill it. And then after that, it would download the patch from Microsoft that would fix the computer and prevent it from being attacked again by either MyDoom or Natchi. And then it would try to spread itself around. And it really was a sort of a unique case of worm justice, where someone nobody knows who wrote My Doom, and nobody knows who wrote the other one either. But it's a case where someone decided to take action and, you know, really use their technical skills to solve this problem. Now, it was a little bit of a misguided bit of vigilante justice, because what ended up happening was that the Welchia worm, because it was built on similar framework as My Doom, also had some of the same bugs and caused some computers to crash.
Mm. I wonder, at the end, did it take credit for it? I mean, was there some cowboy riding off into the sunset and somebody whispering, "Say, what's the name of that masked stranger?"
I think we were all wondering what the name of the masked stranger was, but nobody's willing to take credit for it, because everyone who has a bit of sense in this regard knows that the second you take credit for anything online, that basically opens you up to getting caught. Mm. So nobody wants to get caught, and nobody's taking credit, but somebody did a very good thing.
Daniel, thanks for the call.
You're very welcome. Have a good day.
Andrew, how is government getting involved? We mentioned earlier they're considering bounty hunters for hunting down spammers. Are there other official partnerships going on?
Right. Well, there's also Microsoft has a bounty that's kind of open for anyone who has information that leads to the conviction and arrest of a virus writer that targets a Microsoft operating system or a program. And that's, you know, pretty much, you know, 95% of viruses these days are aimed at Windows and Internet Explorer. That has not proven to be widely used, but it's rumored that the person who was arrested for writing the Sasser worm was turned in by some of his friends who heard about the bounty and wanted to try to cash in on their knowledge of the fact that this guy had done that. Now, we're not aware that Microsoft has paid the bounty to them or to anyone else for that matter, but it certainly does raise the bar in terms of giving people an incentive to go out of their way to try to track stuff down. There are also cases where, for example, Valve, which is a game software company, had some of their source code stolen from computers at their offices for a new game called Half-Life 2. Now, this is a very this is a game that excites gamers when they hear about it, and it was very eagerly awaited, and the theft of the code meant that the game company then had to delay releasing the game for about 6 or 8 months, and it still hasn't hit store shelves yet. But the game company went out of their way to ask the gamers in the gaming community to help them track down the people who stole the source code. And in fact, there was an arrest just a few weeks ago of at least one of the people who had possession of the stolen Half-Life 2 source code. And that's an example where a community effort has brought about a virtual posse, has brought about a happy ending to what was a kind of a nasty cybercrime.
Andrew Brandt, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Andrew Brandt, an associate editor at PC World Magazine, co-author of the forthcoming book, How to Do Everything with Windows XP, and he joined us from the studios of KGO Radio in San Francisco. When we come back from a short break, a look at the passionate history of statistics intertwined in America's national pastime, the numbers game. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.